scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by all Aguilla. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames talk. Starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right, it's good to be back as we welcome you back to Flames Talk. For the first time in more than a week, we're back on this Tuesday, February 18th. It's Steinberg along with you from our Groundworks downtown studio. We got a busy hour ahead. Our first Flames Talk episode since Calgary's last game, that overtime loss to Seattle. Geez, that would have been 10 days ago now, the last time we had some Flames Talk for you. And yes, as I mentioned, busy hour ahead on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Daily Flames Roundtable. We've got lots to dive into there. We had lots of Flames news Tuesday at practice as NHL teams were allowed to return to the ice on this Tuesday afternoon. Both Connor Zary and Kevin Ball back on the ice for the Flames. And that's good news because for the first time in quite some time, Flames looking rather healthy out of practice as well. All that as we move through the hour, and let's kick off this hour by saying hello to our NHL insider. It's time to check in with Frank Saravalli, brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com. Frank joins us now from Daily Faceoff, DailyFaceoff.com, Amazon, and more. Hello, Mr. Saravalli. How are you?
What do you mean, first time in a long time? I don't know about you, but I was here last week.
You sure were.
I talked to Logo and the crew, and you stuck your head in the sand somewhere, so good for you, but some of us keep working here, bud.
I'm not going to be shamed for taking it a single minute off, and I enjoyed every single minute of it. It was quite restorative.
I'm just kidding. Look, I'm not blowing smoke up your arse when I say this. Like, there are so few people around the league and media circles that work as hard as you, and you legitimately deserve it.
Well, thank you, pal. And I was not completely disconnected, because you had to be, speaking of head in the sand, you had to be somewhere with your head in the sand to not see Canada and the United States in that epic showdown last week at the four over the weekend at the Four Nations face off, and we will get into all things Four Nations with you, because you've been doing an incredible job of keeping us up to date as to what the rosters might look like for Thursday's showdown between Canada and the United States to determine this first ever Four Nations face off, and we'll get there in the second half of our chat. How NHL, like, what has your balance been here? Because you've been covering Four Nations full on, but how much have you been keeping your ear to the ground with what's happening with a league on pause?
I'd say not as much, just because Four Nations has been so heavy. I mean, there's been a ton of news to chase between the injuries, the roster changes, the political nonsense and drama that's followed the booing of national anthems, and just the sheer intensity of this tournament. Like, it's been a lot. And so I've kept in touch with different managers around the league. There also happens to be about 8 of them still here. So that part makes it a little bit easier. But there was also a healthy chunk of the league that did actually stick their head in the sand. The guys that weren't part of Four Nations, some of those managers I talked to, and there was almost like an out of office, like, hey, I'm in Florida for the week. Get to me if you really need me. And if not, I'll talk to you when I get back. And that was some of the feedback, not to say they weren't taking calls from, you know, their counterparts. And, but it was actually pretty darn quiet.
Okay.
In that sense.
Because here we are back in Calgary, Flames got Connor Zary and Kevin Ball back on the ice, and both those guys will be important additions to a group that's been pretty thin. They'll get Rasmus Anderson back from the Four Nations faceoff in the next couple of days as well. What stretch drive starts for the Flames on Sunday? Obviously, there's one more game at the Four Nations to go, but how would you characterize this Flames stretch drive outlook now that they'll be a little healthier when things get going again on the weekend?
I'd say to characterize it, squarely in the mix. Look, this team scraps. They scratch. They claw. Definitely not the most talented team. Got more talented with the additions of Frost and Farabee. Ended up being a restful by accident Four Nations for Rasmus Anderson. And this is a team that if Dustin Wolf can find the same footing that he had before the break, has every bit a chance as anyone else in the West to emerge as a playoff team that's in that mix after the sixth seed. So I think the Flames, they've made a believer in me. That doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to get in. There are more talented teams, I think, that are ahead of them or neck and neck with them. Mm-hmm. But I like the moxie that this team has, and I think they've got some juice. And I think they believe in each other, which is as powerful as anything else.
What on that same wavelength, I mean, you know, I know there's a lot swirling around Quinn Hughes and his potential availability for Thursday's game, but he is practicing with Vancouver as they've returned to action as well. The Canucks are the team the Flames find themselves 3 points back of. What JT Miller's been traded, and it looks like they'll be a little healthier after their break as well, but what do things look like, and how do you see Vancouver's stretch drive?
That's the team that I'd be, you know, concerned about, because Hughes obviously is such a big part of that, but isn't fully healthy. The fact that he bailed out of Four Nations and now has sort of been added back as an emergency potential replacement, you know, it certainly raises questions about his health and status moving forward. You don't skip out on a tournament like this, an experience like this, especially alongside your brother, unless you've truly been significantly hurt. And I think that's what Hughes has been dealing with. I think he's been, that part has been weighing on him, the commitment to the Canucks. And frankly, that given the play of Elias Pettersson at this tournament, Hughes kind of has to do almost all the heavy lifting himself, that it's not going to be easy. And I think from a Calgary standpoint, there's still more turmoil to come, because I don't know how, whether it's between now and March 7th or then in the trade and the July 1st when Pettersson's no trade clause kicks in, I don't think they have any choice but to try and find a taker and move on from him. I don't know how you could commit $11.6 million a year for the next 7 years to a guy that has been lost in the wilderness for a 14-month period of time. It's too long, it's too ugly, and there's too much else going on with the way that this has all played out to say that you could make a reasonable bet to commit that type of salary cap space to someone that, frankly, just hasn't delivered.
Yeah. Well, and we'll see how things track in the final stretch of the season with the Flames 3 back of Vancouver for that final wild card spot in the Western Conference. You mentioned Rasmus Anderson, kind of a restful Four Nations for him, did get into Sweden's final game as obviously it was rendered meaningless in the final game of the round robin, but he did get in for Sweden in that final game. I'm just curious as to, you know, where things sit for you. And I know we've asked about this before. It's not a new topic, but, you know, where things sit with him and his future as the Flames sit squarely in the mix, to use your words.
Well, I had another conversation with Craig Conroy last week on Frankly Speaking, and he reiterated again that he has zero interest in trading Rasmus Anderson. It continues to be a topic of conversation. My thought process would be, if that is indeed the case and have zero reason to doubt it, that the Flames would be ready and willing and interested to engage in extension talks when he's eligible in July. Until then, status quo. And I don't anticipate any further sort of conversation or intrigue about his availability and status.
Yeah. And last one on the Flames would be, Now, as when we come back, when it's back to NHL regular season games and the Four Nations is behind us, it'll be the next big thing looming is that trade deadline, which is only a few weeks away now. Like, it is very much right around the corner. The approach seems like it's pretty cut and dried and a pretty good idea as to what the Flames might be looking at. Tinkering maybe, but in terms of their big splash, unless something else comes along, right? Like the trade that we talked about with Philadelphia, it doesn't feel like big splashes are necessarily in the offing for the Flames in the next number of weeks. Would that be fair in terms of what you understand?
I'm not ready and willing to commit to that yet. I still think there's a chance that we see another trade develop like we did with Frost and Farabee. I think the Flames are aggressive. I think they want to find ways to improve their team. I think Craig Conroy is making a ton of calls. And I think if he can get his hands on something else to help push this team over the top and get them in the playoffs, people hear that and they freak out. But that's the plan. And I think this trade helped probably crystallize, at least for some fans that may have been confused, what exactly they're after, which is, I don't know how many other ways to say this or how many times to repeat it.
Yeah.
More players that fit their age scheme. And they exist, and Craig Conroy's calling, and if he can make it happen, he will. Short of that, I would suggest to keep an eye on the Flames in the very last hour before the deadline. And if there are veteran pieces that can help that aren't going to cost anything or much, late round, mid round picks, the Flames are willing to take on a little bit of salary in order to try and get them closer to a playoff spot. If you could find a third pair defenseman on the cheap, that's a vet. If you could find bottom six help that might put in a couple goals, we're talking 12:40 p.m. Mountain Time type additions before the 1 p.m. deadline. That's what we're thinking about. And those are still potentially in the offing as well. So those are things not from my mouth, but go back and listen to the Frankly Speaking episode I did with Craig Conroy right out of his mouth. So take it from the guy who's trying to do the work.
Yeah. We're chatting with Frank Saravalli. He's our Daily Faceoff NHL insider. He joins us every Tuesday on Flames Talk. Flames Talk back after a one-week hiatus. Just around the league, what does this lead up to the deadline look like? We've seen some pretty significant moves over the last number of weeks leading into the Four Nations break, but what's your anticipation in terms of the kind of mood around the league and the way that we see things happen leading up to this year's deadline?
I think it's very fluid. And I'll say there's a couple things still to play out. We've got 13 sleeps left once Four Nations wraps until the deadline. You've got a couple teams that are still kind of trying to determine exactly what they are, and they're going to be important deadline teams, including the New York Islanders. Are they selling finally? They should be. And have they, or will they make that declaration? Then there's top end teams that haven't made any moves yet that you know will. That's Winnipeg, Edmonton, just in the West. I'd imagine Washington will do something, New Jersey. There's still a lot left to unfold for teams that are clear playoff teams. And we really haven't seen very many of the traditional rentals, the normal NHL trade deadline deals. Those guys haven't moved. A lot of what's happened to this point has been the standard, not the non-standard fare, which is the Frost Farabee deal, which is Rantanen, which is all this other stuff that's popped up that got done before Four Nations. They got some interesting big business out of the way. I guess by nature of the actual deadline itself, it's small potatoes compared to the Rantanen trade, but who's to say Rantanen doesn't get moved again? How do we know if the Carolina Hurricanes aren't going to re-sign him? Will they move him? And those are all you know, little ingredients as we're cooking up our trade deadline stew that make it really pretty tasty.
Yeah. 13 sleeps once the Four Nations is done, which is hard to wrap your head around, but it's true.
I think I kind of, yeah, I give myself nightmares saying that because those sleeps do not come easy, but I know that's what these managers are also thinking about, especially for the quarter of the league that are in the building for Four Nations this week that are tending to this team in Canada or the U.S., but also tending to their own. I mean, think about kind of how awkward today was. GM of the Boston Bruins, Don Sweeney, is also the GM of Team Canada and is calling Team USA GM Bill Guerin to find out information about his own player who happens to be his rival this week at Four Nations. Yeah. Things are happening.
Yeah. Okay, Frank, let's dive in. What do we need to know about Thursday's championship game in Boston between Canada and the United States and the Four Nations face-off? What do we need to know roster-wise, health-wise, Quinn Hughes status, all of what? Like, it's every 2 seconds, it feels like you're tweeting something here, man. So what do we need to know about what the rosters look like come Thursday night?
Another thing that's still fluid. So I'll give you the latest on Charlie McAvoy to start.
Okay.
And he's ruled out for Thursday's game, which is a big blow to the U.S. And it's kind of a sad story for him in terms of what developed. So he had a relatively minor injury that unfortunately for him became infected. Obviously the sweat, the gear, everything you wear, these areas are sensitive. And he ended up being hospitalized on Monday night with an infection that got pretty significant. And that unfortunately caused him to be ruled out. Now, with that, the U.S. also has 3 injured forwards. Matthew Tkachuk is dealing with a soft tissue injury. I don't know if it's a groin or a hamstring. It's been difficult for him to get around. He looks better. I don't think there's any doubt that him or Brady Tkachuk play. There doesn't seem to be a ton of concern about Austin Matthews and his, quote, upper body soreness. If it were a game that was meaningful on Monday night, he probably would have played and will no doubt be in the lineup for the U.S. on Thursday. But with that, the U.S. has been granted an exception for defenseman Quinn Hughes to fly to Boston to, I can't say join the team because he's not allowed to play or practice unless they get to a situation where they fall below the threshold of 12 forwards and six defensemen, 12 and six is 18. However, I have a hard time personally believing that they're going to have Quinn Hughes fly across the continent and sit here just to be a spectator. I don't know what's happening behind the scenes. I don't know if there's another injury that we don't know about. Kale McCarr obviously was sick and couldn't play. There is a neurovirus that's been going around the tournament, and guys have been legitimately really, really sick. A bunch of guys on Sweden's roster were sick. Connor McDavid has been sick. McCarr missed the game, which to take him out of that rivalry game, he said it was one of the toughest decisions of his career. So there's a lot happening, and it's very fluid. So I say all that to say stay tuned, because the U.S. somehow, possibly, maybe getting to insert Quinn Hughes in the lineup would be a game changer, even if he's only at 80% or 90%. And it would put them on par with Kale McCarr coming back, which is the big game changer from Saturday night until Thursday. That is fascinating. And one way potentially that the NHL has not ruled yet is if some of those injured forwards, you would probably need 2 of them. If 2 of them can't play, I do think that there's a possibility that this decision to allow Quinn Hughes to play could be made positionally agnostic. In other words, if the U.S. decides to go 11-7 because they only have 11 forwards available, that it's possible that they're allowed to activate Quinn Hughes. The NHL has not decided on that yet, but just something to keep in mind.
What look, we know how important getting back to best on best international play has been to players and has been for a number of years now. And finally we've gotten it this February. And I think for many, the caliber of hockey and the intensity that what we've seen during this round robin has exceeded expectations. It's been really awesome to see. I'm curious, you speak to GMs every day though. Like what has the reaction been from general managers, knowing that whether it's Shea Theodore or Charlie McAvoy or potentially Matthew Tkachuk, so on and so forth, that, you know, important guys for teams after the Four Nations have legitimately gotten hurt here? I'm just curious as to what the reaction from general managers around the league has been.
They're not happy. I mean, there's no doubt about that. That said, it's part of the deal. It's part of the game. And everyone in good faith makes an effort to send their best players to be part of this, knowing that's a possibility for the betterment of the game, for the betterment of the players and their confidence and the experience that they have. But it's not easy given the commitment that you make and multi-millions of dollars to play for your team and to play for your team to get into the playoffs. Now, other end of that is I can also tell you that the managers here at this tournament are unhappy with the NHL and NHLPA's roster rules and how this has all worked. They advocated from the very beginning to have 25 players on the roster, not 23. They knew that over the course of an intense tournament like this that you'd end up with injuries and issues. And they could see this coming, and it's made life more difficult on them than they really wanted it to be. The NHLPA partially pushed back because they wanted to have players to have the ability to take a vacation and not be beholden to the rink to just be an extra. And so I get it from both sides, but I was told today that the next time the NHL and NHLPA do this in the 2028 World Cup,
yep,
that roster rules will be different, and they'll get it right.
Okay, here's the big two-part question. If the United States is going to beat Canada a second time in the championship showdown, what needs to happen? And if Canada is to beat the United States this time around and get a measure of revenge when it matters that much more, what needs to happen? How does either side win on Thursday night in Boston, Frank?
So I'll start with the U.S., and they need to play a really clean game. I don't want to say perfect, because Connor Hellebuck can clean up what isn't perfect, and he's been damn near perfect himself. But if you think about Saturday and you think about the way that the U.S. locked it down, the way that the U.S. really played within themselves, didn't go crazy, didn't get outside their comfort zone, were perfectly comfortable to take the puck in their own end and flip it up in the air out into the neutral zone and run under it and then try and make something happen, that's a big reason why they were largely in control of the game. Canada, it's different. They have the three best players in the world, the three best players in this tournament, and they need more from their offense. They need more from their superstars. Playing a game against the U.S., and as good as Hellebuck was, but having the ability to throw out Sidney Crosby, Connor McDavid, and Nathan MacKinnon on one line, which they did for chunks of the third period, having one goal and one goal only is inexcusable. And so you can make all the comments you want about Jordan Binnington and the soft goals that he's given up. I would describe his tournament as very average, and I would say that that's all you were expecting to get from him coming in. Every single game, even though they blew a third period lead against Sweden, they've had a chance to win. And they had a chance to win against the U.S., up 1-0 and trailing 2-1 in the third. When you have such a deficit in goal, in talent, a disparity between yourself and your opponent, in my opinion, it's not been perfect. It hasn't even been good. But Jordan Binnington has been serviceable. If the Canadian vaunted offense produced more than they did, we wouldn't be having this conversation. And so, by the way, it is okay and is allowed for Team Canada's bottom six to actually contribute. So there's two parts of it. The Stars need to do their part, and it would be nice to get some bottom six scoring. That said, I would lean toward, you didn't ask me, but my prediction would be that Canada wins and wins in OT, and it's something like 3-2, because I just don't believe that with the talent and firepower that they have, that you can hold them to one goal again. And that's the bet I would make.
Frankie, you've covered the entire tournament, first in Montreal and now in Boston. And you know, the political climate has made it that much more interesting and wasn't lost on anybody how it might have added to what we saw Saturday between Canada and the United States. But for an event that'll never happen again, that is kind of a whistle wetter for the Olympics next year and to set the stage for the World Cup of Hockey starting in 2028 and beyond. How would you sum up the Four Nations face-off with one more game to go? How would you look at it in terms of a success or opposite?
Electric. Everything you could want it to be and more. A crime that the NHL and NHLPA went 11 years without this. I said to you on your show a couple years ago that the biggest indictment on Gary Bettman's tenure, and I included Don Fehr at the time, who was at the NHLPA for a huge chunk of that, that was their biggest issue, is that they never got back to best on best. And it was always an excuse. This isn't a perfect tournament, but it's perfect for what the NHL needed right now. And because of the political vortex that I think the NHL was really squeamish about being around last week, is now all of a sudden a huge blessing in disguise for this league and this game, because you've now brought into the fold so many people that don't like hockey, don't care about hockey, and don't watch hockey in the US, where the population is 10x the size of Canada. And that may mean more people rooting against Canada, but in a way, I think if we could all put down our flags and allegiance for the greater good of the game, the best outcome is for the U.S. to win on Thursday, because they have to deliver. And it's something that I think could propel the game in a better direction. And I know that's an unpopular thing to say on Calgary radio, but I believe that to be truth. And I can just tell you from my inbox, I was sitting there today and I got a beverage with some league executives, and we're in a bar in Boston. And if you look up on SportsCenter in the US, it's nonstop hockey. You look up and it's Sam Bennett being interviewed on SportsCenter. It's Adam Fox being interviewed on SportsCenter. It's playing the clips and highlights of these two teams duking it out on Saturday night. Pardon my take of, you know, a sports podcast, a football podcast is talking about hockey to lead off their show. The White House is tweeting about it. All these things are happening, and they otherwise wouldn't. And if you think back to some of the biggest and best sporting events that we've seen in this sport, from the 72 Summit Series to the 80 Miracle on Ice, it's because it was way bigger than just a game. It's because there was more on the line, and I understand how Canadians feel. If someone was threatening or joking about annexing my country, I'd be doing a lot more than booing. So I get it. But there's a lot to this, and that's what makes this game on Thursday, as the U.S. is trying to battle for international hockey supremacy and to put their country on the map after a ton of second place finishes, that there's a whole lot to look at.
Yep. And I'll tell you this much, it doesn't hurt the hype for the Olympics in a year's time either, because the next time these two teams play, regardless of what happens on Thursday night, that whether it's round robin or inevitably them meeting at some point in the medal round is going to be pretty special as well. Frank, enjoy it on Thursday night, pal. Really appreciate the time. It's good to be back, and it's good to have you back on Flamestock. We'll chat after the Four Nations next week, hey?
Likewise. Sounds good, Pat.
Okay. That's Frank Saravalli. He is our Daily Faceoff NHL insider. He joins us Tuesdays on Flames Talk, and he joins us brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit southtrailchrysler.com. As we are underway this hour on Flames Talk, it's good to be back. Flames Talk's been on hiatus for a little more than a week. That last game the Flames played, the comeback loss against Seattle. That was our last Flames Talk podcast, our little post-game show that night, and we've been off ever since. Good to be back. Flames Talk back. Flames back at practice as they practiced on Thursday afternoon, and some good news at practice as well. Both Connor Zary and Kevin Ball, not unexpectedly, but still encouragingly, on the ice and took part in regular jerseys for the entire practice. There was no Rasmus Anderson at practice. He's still making his way back from out east from the Four Nations faceoff, so he'll rejoin practice Thursday, Friday, sometime in that range. But Kevin Ball will be right back on a pairing with Rasmus Anderson. Connor Zary right onto a line with Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman. So that is by far the healthiest roster the Flames have had in quite some time, especially when you put Zary and Ball into the mix with Frost and Farabee, who got their first practices in. Yeah, some good news at Flames practice. So lots to dive into. And that guy that is making his way back from the Four Nations, Calgary's only participant at the Four Nations faceoff, is going to be the topic on our Daily Flames Roundtable in just a minute's time. Hey, can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's hockey station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time now for a Tuesday edition of our Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport. Welcome back to this edition of Flames Talk. Welcome back to Flames Talk. Off for a week. Good to be back. It's Pat Steinberg with you. Wes Gilbertson's here all week from Post Media. Hello, Wes.
Hello, Patrick.
And now Derek Wills, the voice of the Flames, joins us to complete our Tuesday Daily Flames Roundtable. And guys, I wanted to, because we don't have another game for the Flames to play until Sunday, so we're not quite back into the nitty-gritty daily grind. Once the Flames are back, then it becomes the daily grind once again. But there was one player that the Flames had representing their country, or his country, at the Four Nations faceoff. Rasmus Anderson is making his way back to this side of the country after getting into one game as a member of Sweden's team, their final game at the Four Nations faceoff. But guys, because he was the only guy representing his country at the Four Nations, and because he's been such a hot button topic, it's what part of the reason why I asked Frank Saravalli about him in the first half of this hour to kind of set the table. Gents, because everything goes back to him, it feels like, whenever you start talking about the trade deadline, give me your number one reason for re-signing or extending Rasmus Anderson. Give me your top reason why extending Anderson is the way to go for the Flames.
Well, first of all, hindsight is 20/20, but maybe Sweden should have put him in the lineup in their first couple of games, because the only one they won was with him on their blue line. But I guess that game against the United States didn't matter much to one of those two teams. But certainly will be good for the Flames to have him back, and maybe not as much wear and tear after going to that Four Nations faceoff had he played in all three games. But as far as Rasmus Anderson is concerned, the Flames have had some star players who, once they reached their prime, decided they didn't want to stay here. So if Rasmus Anderson, who has spent 9 seasons as a member of this organization and has become a top 2 defenseman for them, you know, leads the team in average time on ice, I think his defensive game has really come a long way, even if his offensive numbers have dropped off, then I think you have to look at keeping him. I mean, he's an important player on the ice, and guys, I think you'd agree that he's a really important player off the ice as well. He's become a leader. He's worn a letter for the last few seasons. He's a big part of the Flames' 6- or 7-man leadership group that we've heard so much about this season. So as a homegrown guy who was drafted by this organization and developed by the team and has turned out to be one of their top 2 defensemen and has been that guy for the last handful of seasons, I think if you can keep him at the right price, you keep him.
I just want to, because I know there's people already screaming at their radio players. We're going to get into the reasons maybe, you know, to look at it the other way.
So we're making it a very balanced roundtable.
So to start with the biggest reason to keep Rasmus Anderson, this is it for me, guys. As soon as you lose or trade or otherwise get rid of Rasmus Anderson, you're immediately looking for another Rasmus Anderson. Like you just don't have a guy in your system, whether that's on your team right now or in your pipeline, who projects to be anything like Rasmus Anderson. I know it's easy to get excited about the prospects, and especially the right-handed defense prospects that the Flames have. It's easy to get excited and say, well, you know, look at the numbers that Zane Parekh is putting up. And geez, every time I check the OHL stat page, he's put up 2 or 3 more points the night before. It's easy to get excited about Henry Muse, a third rounder this past year, and the guy kind of right behind Zane Parekh in defensive scoring. Like it's easy to look and say, well, we got Parekh on the right side, we got Henry Muse on the right side, Rasmus Anderson's going to be blocking these guys. And I just can't stress enough that that's not the case. Rasmus Anderson is a completely different type of defenseman. He's a guy that you can trust with shutdown minutes. He's a guy that you can put on your penalty kill. He's a guy who, in a meaningless game between Sweden and the U.S., was blocking shots like it was going out of style, including one off the inside of his hand that I'm sure gave a lot of people a scare in Calgary before he was out there a couple minutes later. And so the biggest reason for me, and as Wilsey said, it comes down to price and it comes down to term and all that stuff, but the biggest reason I have been pushing or saying that if it was my call, I'd be keeping Rasmus Anderson is the moment you don't have him, it's exactly what you're looking for. And if you think it's easy to find another Rasmus Anderson, guess again.
It's kind of like when I think about it, the hockey stuff makes sense and all that type of stuff, but it's kind of similar wavelength as to where you are, Wilsey, and I just sometimes you want guys to just play with your organization, and especially guys that you identified, you drafted, you developed, and you watched turn into the player that they are. And look, I think it's safe to say that Rasmus Anderson has turned into what, a top 25, top 30 defenseman in the NHL. And he did that on his own because he's a hell of a hockey player, but he also did that as a member of the Flames organization and with the Flames development group guiding and all that type stuff. They spent a second round pick on him. And sometimes, and I know that this is not a universally held opinion, but I still think that there is an inherent value in keeping players in your organization, and especially players that you drafted, players that are homegrown, I think that it is important for cap management. I think it's important for roster management. And I also think it sends a message to the rest of the league that this is a place that players want to come, and or this is a player that places want. This is a place rather that players want to stay. And to your point, Wilsey, I mean, there's been enough players, homegrown or otherwise. But you know, take Tanev and Hanifin and even Lindholm out of the conversation. You know, Johnny Gaudreau deciding to leave for Columbus, and Matthew Tkachuk essentially not forcing his way out, but saying he's not going to stay, and the Flames making the call to trade him at the first available opportunity. Like, there's two homegrown players that decided that they were not going to be Flames for the long, long term. And now Sam Bennett's another example. I look at a guy like Rasmus, and if he's got a desire to stay, and he told Wes eye to eye that there is a desire to stay a number of weeks ago, I just think that there is an inherent value in being able to keep a player that you drafted and you built or helped build into the player he is today, keeping them in the organization. And you can, and we'll get into the arguments for going the other way. And a lot of those arguments are really, really valid. But I do think that the whole idea of keeping important players in your organization for the balance of their career, I think that there is an inherent value in doing that.
Yeah, and I do see both sides of the argument, guys. And we talked a little bit about it last week when you guys were away. But you know, I do think that finding a top-pairing defenseman is tough to do. And yeah, there are some exciting prospects in the organization. I mean, you could argue that Zane Parekh is the most exciting prospect the Flames have had since Matthew Tkachuk. Like, he is having an outstanding season in the Ontario Hockey League. But what's he going to be in the National Hockey League? When is he going to be an NHLer? So, you know, replacing Rasmus Anderson, who, if he's not your best defenseman, he's one of your top two defensemen. It's either him or Mackenzie Weegar, depending on the day or depending on who you ask. It's not going to be easy for this team. So I think there are plenty of good reasons to keep him. But on the flip side, what does keeping him look like, A? And B, what could you get for him if you traded him? I'm interested with those two things.
Well, Daily Flames Roundtable, Derek Wills, Wes Gilbertson, Pat Steinberg on this Tuesday edition of Flames Talk. Let's maybe go there on the other side, because it is a very fair and balanced roundtable on this Tuesday. So those were our number one reasons for keeping Rasmus and for extending Anderson. What's your top reason for moving on? What's your top reason for moving away from Rasmus and potentially moving him between now and the summer of 2026?
Well, this is a tougher one for me to answer, Pat, because there are a bunch of what ifs here. So I just threw a couple of them out there. What if a team comes knocking on your door and makes you an offer that is difficult to refuse? You know, what if someone thinks they're a Rasmus Anderson away from winning the Stanley Cup and puts together a really strong package, whether that be maybe a centerman who could become a first liner for you. Maybe it's a first round pick or a top prospect. Maybe it's a package of different things. You know, I think Rasmus Anderson, if the Flames did decide to listen, would have a lot of teams interested in his services. So there's that. And then there's the contract. You know, what would the contract look like? So Rasmus Anderson is 28 years old. So for argument's sake, let's say he's willing to stay, but only on a max 8-year term. Well, he would be 37 years old when that contract expired. Are you comfortable with that if you're the Flames? Maybe you are, maybe you're not. And then what would the AAV be? So for me, Rasmus is probably looking, with the salary cap going up and going up considerably, he's probably going to want 8+. Is that fair?
Yes. Yep.
But yeah, I mean, I think so. Are you willing to pay a defenseman who is really good defensively and can be really good offensively, but truth be told, guys, hasn't been for most of the season? I mean, Rasmus Anderson has 21 points in 55 games, but 10 of those points were in the first 8 games. So he's got 11 points in 47 games since then. As good as he's been defensively, I still think that there's a lot more there offensively. I wish he would use his shot more. He's got a great shot, one of the best shots in the team. I just I feel like he doesn't use it enough. And if I'm going to pay a guy $8 million plus, he's going to have to be good defensively. And Rasmus, as I said earlier, has come a long way when it comes to that part of the game. But, you know, I need him to probably chip in a little bit more offensively, which he's done in the past. He's put up 50 points in this league. So we know he can do it. He just hasn't done it to that level this season. So for me, the fact that someone might be willing to make you an offer that would be tough to refuse would be one thing. And then the other one would be the contract. Listen, if I could get the guy for $8 million on an AAV for the next 6 years, I'd probably sign off on that today, but I'm not sure he would.
Yeah, there's really only one answer to, I think, this half of it, guys, which is, well, what's the reason not to keep Rasmus Andersson? It's at, as Wilsey outlined already, it's A, that you flinch at the contract ask, or B, that you're blown away by what you might be able to get in return, and then what it can mean as you continue to try to build toward a team that's going to contend at Scotia Place and into the future. And instead of just sort of repeating what Derek said, I just want to lay out why I think this is such a, like, I think the Flames are in a really good position here, and that's because I know that Rasmus Andersson's future has become a hot topic 19 or 20 months before his contract expires, mm-hmm. but Craig Conroy has a real good opportunity this coming summer to find out the answers that he needs and still come close to maximizing the trade value on a guy if he doesn't like where the contract details are headed. I think there's no question that Rasmus Andersson, if he was going to re-up in Calgary, would be looking for a max term deal. There's not many guys looking to hit UFA again at 36 years old because, hey, you know, my chance to really kind of hit my home run contract at that point has come and gone. But the opportunity that awaits Craig Conroy is that you can find out in May or June sort of the specifics of what Rasmus Andersson wants on his next contract. And if you get towards Canada Day, if you get to the draft, if you get into summer and you're not comfortable meeting that contract ask, you're going to have a lot of teams that are interested in bringing Andersson in for a full year and test driving them and getting their own opportunity to re-sign them. You're going to have teams that have just fallen short of their ultimate goal. I'm going to use the Oilers as an example, and I don't think Rasmus Andersson is getting traded to the Oilers, but you had the Stanley Cup runner-up from the season before. If Rasmus Andersson was available in a trade to them this summer, that's probably the type of guy that they're looking for. Who's going to be the Stanley Cup runner-up? Who's losing in the Eastern and Western Conference final? And do they look at Andersson as a potential missing piece? And so I do think that the Flames are well positioned here. Do you think Craig Conroy repeating over and over again that he sees Rasmus Andersson as a Flame doesn't have a little bit to do with maintaining leverage after a year of having no leverage in trade negotiations because everybody knew what the outcome was going to be? Of course it has something to do with leverage. Craig Conroy is a smart guy, and so he's got a real opportunity to find out what the ask is, find out how it fits his long-term salary structure, and then make his move from there.
You know, the number one reason to not go down the extension road for me, and you guys make some great points. The thing that I continue to go back to, though, guys, is it's not an ideal situation based on his last contract. Because Rasmus signed a 6 out of his entry level, they didn't bridge him, they didn't go 8. He signed a 6 out of entry level. It puts him in a spot where he'll be 29 to start next year. And so when a new contract begins, he'll be 30, which means you're getting, he turns 30 on October 27th of 2026. And so that means year one of his extension, if he were to sign it here in Calgary, would be as a 30-year-old. And that is, Mark Giordano's a unicorn, and we all, Gio was an incredible player here, but how many guys get better as they're over 30? Like 1% of them. And so that is the thing that worries me the most, and it's the thing that always gives me pause whenever we have these conversations is that he will be 30, and so the contract will take him from 30 to 38, which are likely going to be all diminishing return years, or at the very least, a good chunk of those years will be diminishing return years. I'm also, I have not loved him the last about 20 games of the of his campaign. I think his level of play has really dropped. I think part of that is losing ball for the last 8 games, but I think it was trending that way, and we'd spoken about that a little earlier, Willsey. I think that pairing had kind of taken a step back prior to Ball's injury, but I still think Rasmus is a very good defenseman, and I still think he's an important part of this team going forward, but a guy signing an 8-year extension that will take him from the ages of 30 to 38 always worries me a little bit, and that would be my number one reason for going in a different direction, especially if what you guys talk about, the potential to cash in on a trade, is as high as we think it potentially might be.
Yeah, I mean, you guys make some really strong points. Here's the one thing that Craig Conroy and the Flames can absolutely not do. Let him walk away for nothing. I think we can all agree on that. And there's nothing to suggest that Conroy's going to do that because in his 2 years as general manager, he hasn't done that with any of his top players who were pending UFAs. So the Flames don't have to make a decision today. They don't have to make a decision between now and the trade deadline next month. They don't even necessarily have to make a decision during the offseason. But Pat, to your point, I do think they're going to have a way better idea of what Rasmus wants as far as a contract is concerned when the two sides continue their discussions. I'm sure they've started already to some extent, but I'm sure they'll heat up during the offseason. And if the Flames don't see a path forward to signing Rasmus Anderson to a contract that works for both the player and for the team, then I think there's going to be a big market out there for him. And the Flames, whether it be during the offseason or even once next season starts and he's in the final year of his contract, can cash in and try to maybe fill another hole by trading away a guy who's been a top two defenseman for them for quite some time. And will he be easy to replace? No, but the cupboards are stocked. So whether there's a guy who can step in and be Rasmus Anderson right away, I doubt it. But there are certainly a bunch of guys who could turn into top two, top pairing guys down the road. And hey, you've got Mackenzie Weegar, so he can play the right side of your top pairing for sure. And then you're trying to figure out your second pairing after that.
Good stuff, Willsey. It's good to have the round table back. We'll do it again on Wednesday. Thank you, sir.
Okay, guys. Stay warm.
He is Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up this hour on Flames Talk. Thanks to Cam Hughes. Thanks to Shan Vergy, our outstanding producers this hour. And the Daily Flames Roundtable is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.